Hi, everybody. Welcome. So let's just begin by forming our community, if you would. Just glance around, acknowledging each other. And it's good to have support of each other as we investigate judging minds. And I'm actually, the format's going to be a little different tonight, not much, but a little, because I want to say a few things to start. And I want to say something about judging mind when we practice. Our meditation practice is really a laboratory where we can watch how our minds work. And it's very simple. We just sit here and our body's still, but our mind goes to the races. And that's very natural and common. So if you're new to meditation, that's not a problem. Thinking is not a problem. It's the being lost in it and identified with it that causes all of our difficulty. So we will be thinking in the next 30 minutes, no problem. The trick is, as soon as you notice that you've been lost in thought, is to just very simply return to noticing your breath. And probably I would recommend working with breath tonight. If your practice is more like full body and that's really working for you, then fine. But generally, just kind of keep it simple tonight, being aware of your breath. And our practice is an intentional practice. We have the intention for attention. And so if you would, just set the intention now to, in the next 30 minutes, be as aware as you can possibly be. So there may be themes in your life or your day that work on you and gnaw at you. Whatever those are, set the intention now to, as soon as you notice those arising, label it, planning, or reminiscing, or stressing, and come back to noticing the breath. So if you sort of pre-set your intention, it can be very helpful. And it's just a simple return. The minute we notice we're distracted, we're already aware. So there's really nothing to do. We're already aware, so all we have to do is resume our focus back on our breath. So it's actually a very simple little move. So if that could be your first intention, see if you can make your second intention to be to judge your practice as little as possible. And let's just do something together, if you would. See what this in-breath is like right now. Just notice it. And the out-breath. Notice the out-breath. Okay. So why don't you allow yourself one judgment right now? And that judgment is, I'm already ahead. Because I've already noticed one breath, and that's one more than I would have noticed if I was just out of my day. So you've already won. You're already ahead. Great. If you happen to notice one more, then that's double, you know, double benefit. And then this is the best thing about the. Here's the reason not to judge. Obviously, the main reason is it sucks. We hate it. We don't like it, actually, when we judge ourselves. We often miss that. Our practice will show us that. But the most important reason not to judge is that it can't work. It's really awesomely cool. If you are judging yourself for how unaware you're being, you're just lost again in distraction. So judging cannot work. It cannot help you be aware because you're just lost in more judgment. So let this be your second intention. To judge your practice as little as possible. because it doesn't work and it hurts, both things. And the third intention, there's a lot of intentions here. Be on the lookout for your judgments when they happen. And just notice what it's like in your body when you're in a judging thought, whether it's about your practice or anything else. So that you can have the experience of what it's like. We often don't know what it's like to be sitting here running our judgment tape loops, and we don't actually know the cost of it. And our practice is about getting real. And so one of the things we need to do to work with judging mind is to get real about how it is when we're sitting here being really harsh with ourselves. So three intentions: as present as possible, as little judging as possible, and when there's judging, notice what it's like. So rather than doing the classical refuges of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, let's take refuge in our three intentions. So if you would just take a moment to set your intentions again, and we'll begin our practice. So this is going to be really a series on working with judgmental mind. So I want to just introduce the topic, and also, and then today more specifically talk about how mindfulness and meditation specifically helps us work with judgmental mind. So I think we'd all agree that this aspect of ourselves is challenging. Being hard on ourselves, being hard on others. In some ways, this is the biggest killjoy in our lives, that we're hard on ourselves. And if you, as the joke sort of goes, if you want to rescue yourself from your natural ease and well-being, then let the judging begin, because there's nothing that sort of crimps our heart more than being harsh and self-critical and critical of others. And it's really one of the main patterns that we as Dharma teachers have had to work with ourselves and get brought into retreat when people are really struggling. Often there's some real core or kernel of self-criticism that's really hard on people. And it's just, it's a very common affliction of our minds. Life is hard. And life is even harder, though, when we come pre-disapproved, when we're already really harshing on ourselves. And then often for many of us, we hate to be criticized by other people, and we're very sensitive to it because we're already doing so much of it ourselves. Do you ever notice that you kind of are watching yourself really closely so that you can act in just the right way so that you don't get criticized, thinking that that really works? But actually what happens is we end up being so hard on ourselves that we're then very sensitive or upset when someone else is hard on us. So I'll just read a poem about being hard on ourselves. It's called If Only by Constance Lee Meniff. Perfection is a stubble-tongued whore who clacks her bedroom slipper false teeth and twitches well-oiled hips knowingly. You could have done more, you should have done better, if only, And if only you'd sweated harder, never slept, tried again, double checked, revised, replaced, been worthy, deserved to be right, it would all have fallen into place by now. Ouch. If only. There's this quality in a way where we take on so much responsibility, and it's all our fault often when things go wrong in our lives. The Buddhist truth of the first noble truth, that life's got a lot of suffering in it, is actually can be a really big relief. When things go wrong, often it has nothing to do with us. It's just the lawfulness of the universe. Things go wrong. Murphy's Law. In Boulder, there's a particular form of this blaming ourselves for everything. And I think there's a really positive aspect of this whole movement around getting that our intentions and our thoughts have a kind of power, and that we attract and repel things with our energy. But I think it's really easy to go overboard with that and feel like because someone abused you, you attracted it. Or you're working with a really harsh boss, you know, you've attracted it. Or you're in a harsh relationship. And that's just another form of taking a spiritual insight and turning it against ourselves and blaming us for the universe being as flawed and imperfect as it is. So there's a great Bruce Eric Kaplan cartoon about this. One duck is saying to another in the pond, "Maybe you should ask yourself why you're inviting all this duck hunting into your life right now." It's a big relief to accept this flawed universe as it is. And there's so much messed up stuff, and it's just the way life is. And sometimes it's our fault. But it's really a very painful kind of narcissism to believe it's all our fault. And I forget which writer said this, but it's a particular form of suffering where you believe you're the little piece of shit that the world revolves around. As long as we can be the center of the world, we'll take being the piece of shit. So it's very painful to be that narcissistic. It's a big relief to not blame yourself for everything. We don't attract everything. We attract some things, and then other things just happen. So let's actually begin the exploration of judging mind and what it is and how it works and how we can work with it. If you would, take just a little time to talk amongst yourselves, maybe in groups of three. What would happen to you if you stopped judging? What would happen in your life if you could just completely give up being self-critical? So, and this is optional, you know, if it's totally 100% okay if for some reason you're just not in the mood to be in small groups, so you can just kind of chill here with me. I'll just chill over. And it's only going to be just for a couple minutes. So what would happen in your life if magically that inner critic voice just got muted. I'd say let's focus on judging ourselves. Yeah. Anything you'd like to share with the larger?
Well, the first thing I noticed is that when I started exploring that, a fear came up that if I let go of my judgment, I wouldn't be productive anymore. Productivity, my motivation to work out one example or work on different things.
Okay, thank you. So the idea that being productive or being motivated would sort of just go out the window with our judgments. Can anyone relate to that? Some nods.
And just to sort of amplify that a little bit, to me it was the sense of like there's a utility in judgment, and then we got sort of into that idea of, well, maybe there's a distinction between, you know, the judging and sort of like that death-dealing aspect of judgment as opposed to discerning, where you're actually looking at things and trying to make sense of something and come to a crystallization on something. It seems like judgment gives you something to, like, coalesce on. You know, you can say, oh, that person's a jerk, and then I can move on. You know? So it does give you a focus, and it can come to a point. There's that utility. That's why I should kind of try and pass on that. There's a utility to judgment. That's what we were sort of getting at. Well.
So if I heard you right, it can be a ramp towards discernment. Is that right?
Yeah,
as a summary, like it can focus you on sometimes on some things that need to be focused on, and can be a real judging piece to that. But if that was let go of, there could be discernment. Is that right?
And I think we were just sort of getting into some of the semantics of it, like what is that judgment, and it has that tone to it where it's like something shuts you down, right?
Okay. Or so that's part of. What I'll talk about is the difference between judging and discerning. Important discernment.
You know, that harsh inner critic comes up a lot if I'm wanting to avoid feeling some emotions that are uncomfortable, especially if I've just been hurt or something's happened and there's a vulnerability there.
Mm.
So feeling angry at myself or, you know, being critical is actually a lot, in some ways, in my twisted thinking at times, feels easier than actually feeling the vulnerability of the hurt.
Very insightful. So that judging can be a way of avoiding difficult states, vulnerability, etc. And so if the judging was gone, then you would just be awash in those vulnerable states. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, so I think I'll address all of that, I think. We can actually be very motivated and very productive without harshness to drive us forward. We can be very discerning without needing to think people are jerks. we at times may need to actually bracket our experience and not open to something that feels overwhelming. And we can do that without being harsh with ourselves. So skillful avoidance is definitely good at times. All of it can be done without judging. So hopefully you'll be convinced of that, hopefully, if you're not already. This didn't quite come up, but sometimes people, our judging parts, our inner critical parts, can be thinking it's like very reality based. Like, let's just get real. Like, just admit it. You know. But judging mind is not based in reality, and it's not rational. Reality is ever-changing, deeply complex, and impossible to capture with our thoughts. We can approximate it. We can draw really good maps of things, but the maps and the territory are absolutely different. And so judging is all part of the map-making. And our judgments are based on standards, codes, rules, and these are sort of fixed ideas about things. But reality doesn't conform. You know, it might be helpful to have a few guidelines and guideposts and maps, but that's all they are. They're not the real thing. Our judgments are fixed in time when people change. Even when people have certain characteristics, they can still do opposite things. The other thing about our judgments is they're very partial. They're just coming from our values, our criteria, our assumption, our points of view. I'm going to throw a fair bit of humor into this because this topic can just be a bummer. So, so here's an example of obviously a different point of view. A Buddhist master is speaking to a monk, saying, "I've never met anyone so thoughtless in my life. Keep up the good work." That's the point of view, different point of view. You kind of have to see the visual here, but there's a woman in a kind of flowery print shirt with a little flowery lamp, and she's addressing a half-open door with a pair of eyes peering out. And she's saying, "Are you sure you don't want a pretty little lamp for your man cave?" Very different judgments and points of view. Another Kaplan cartoon, "I understand completely. I like good movies, you like bad movies." Differing perspectives again. A four-year-old saying to her father, "I love you too, Daddy, but it just kills me that you're a man." And last but not least, two people sitting angrily in a bar. "I never said I love you. I said I love ya." Big difference. So our judgments are really about us. And this is really helpful to remember when you're being judged by somebody. We're just projecting our stuff out onto the world, our values, our ideas, our beliefs, our assumptions, and expecting that other people should be like us. And when they're not, they're wrong, or bad, or off, or whatever. So Anais Nin said, "We don't see the world as it is, we see it as we are." So when you're being really judgmental, remember it's about you. It's not really about the other person, ultimately. And when someone's really judging you, it can be really helpful to remember it's really about them. They're just putting their stuff all over us. They often will have no clue about us when they're judging us harshly. Okay. This is just the start of things. So I'm going to go through and talk about the difference between discernment and judging mind. What else am I going to do? The difference between reacting and responding, a little bit about future topics, and then get into how meditation really helps us with this So discernment and judgment. So imagine a blue sky with a cloud in it. So what would be a discerning statement you could make about the sky? There's a cloud in the sky. Has it ever occurred to you to judge a cloud in the sky? Like, what's wrong with that cloud? You know, it shouldn't be there. Today's a high pressure day. You know?
Could be a threatening storm cloud.
But see, that could be a little more of a discernment, right? If it was really dark, if the cloud was really dark.
It would be a perfectly blue sky except for the cloud.
That's another discerning statement. Yeah. Right, that's starting to more in the judging. So discerning is just clear seeing. It's noticing there's a white cloud and there's blue sky. Judging is assigning a value.
Say that's a sign of doom.
Yeah. But see, even that might be discernment. I mean, that's a little bit, you know, I mean, it's not really saying that's a bad cloud. It's more like, something could happen, right? The judgments that are the most problematic are the ones that say good and bad. You know, this is good, that's bad. And the main problem with good and bad is it disconnects us from the thing itself. And the minute something is good or bad, it's actually living in a different world. It's living in a world of value judgments. So, thou shalt not steal. So, you decide you're not going to steal because you know, you have a real fear of ending up in hell. And so you don't steal. But you have no intrinsic connection with what it's like to steal or what the impact is of stealing. You're making a decision based on a code or a rule, not on what it's really like. So judgments of all kinds disconnect us from reality, and value judgments that really are laden with good and bad really disconnect us. Yes.
Are you suggesting that codes are without value?
Good question. Are codes without value? I'll repeat the questions for the mic. By the way, I'm trying a new thing. I'm hoping it's going to work where I can start having recordings of the talks and being posted online. I did this once before. It's taken a while to figure it out. I think I got it down. So I will send an email out with a link to the Dharma Talk webpage. So I think codes and rules and standards can definitely have value because they simplify things. You know, we know how to act in certain situations so we don't have to think too much or whatever. But they're secondary. They're not primary, right?
I understand, but we can't have all the experiences that are summed up in the wisdom of a particular code sometimes.
Right, so right, right, exactly, yeah. So it's not to say our good and bad value judgments aren't useful sometimes, but we have to recognize that all of our thinking is divorced from reality, and our judgments are particularly divorced from reality because we feel them so strongly. And good and bad is especially divorced from reality. And so our codes around good and bad are just codes. We don't have intrinsic motivation for doing or not doing things when we're just living by code. So we don't connect with our heart, what's really aligned with our heart's desire, as well as our heart's kind of like yuck when we're living by code. What's primary is how it works for us and others, how things work. You know, we can actually get in touch with how things are working and continually reevaluate, because things are always changing. Judgments freeze things like you can put things in a shelf, in a box, and this is the way that person is. They are this or that or this. That person's generous, that person's selfish. This person is, you know, funny, this person is smart. And we have our judgments, and they're just kind of fixed ideas about things. They are not really being connected with the true flux of things. So again, it's not that judging is good or bad. It's that it often is very disconnected. And then thoughts that are disconnected don't work very well. They don't work well for us. They don't work well for others. So notice that I'm not judging the judging. This is more discernment. So discernment has three qualities, just so we can separate. Judging has this main quality of making things good and bad. And it has this other quality of being in some kind of reactive relationship with something. When you're in a judgment, you're sort of pulling away from the thing, making conclusions about it, and you're kind of lost in your own world of assumptions, values, beliefs, etc. Do you ever notice that you have a judgment about a person and you will sort of always see them through that filter once you've made the judgment? And so that even when they do something that contradicts it, you know, you say, ah, it's the exception that proves the rule. There's something we do with our judgments. It's this pre-existing belief that we have about something or somebody, and it's almost like there's no data that can contradict it or change it. We're done taking in more data. We have our judgment, and that's the way it is. That's when we're deeply, deeply divorced from reality, and that's sort of the extreme of a reactive relationship, disconnected. So discernment involves being connected, and it involves seeing clearly, and it has three hallmarks.
Question here.
Yeah, okay.
Are we just hardwired for judgment, or is it just a conditioning of our culture?
Are we hardwired for judgment, or is it a conditioning of our culture? I'd say both. Yeah. I'll just address that. That's somewhere else in my notes. Okay, this is from Rick Hansen, Buddha's Brain. Part of being human is to have a brain that selectively scans for, registers, stores, recalls, and reacts to unpleasant experiences. The brain is like Velcro for negative experiences and Teflon for positive ones. For instance, brain detects negative information much faster than the positive in the realm of facial expressions. A fearful expression is recognized a lot more quickly than a happy one. So there is hardwiring. In John Gottman's research, he says in relationship, it takes about 5 positive interactions to overcome the effects of 1 negative one. I was just reading yesterday about an investment strategy, and it's very hard for people to sell because people can't stand taking a loss. People will buy very easily when they invest. But the taking a loss with a stock apparently impacts people many more times than making a gain with a stock. So there is a negativity bias in the brain for very negative value judgments. And again, as Rick said, scanning for it, registering it, remembering it, are negative experiences. So it's partly just the human brain. And the theory is that it somehow has survival value. If you were scanning more for what's wrong when your life was really at stake, you were probably more likely to survive and pass your genes on. So no one knows for sure, but that's the theory. So it's also cultural. Industrialized, individualized culture, if you've ever lived in a more communal culture or been around it, we become, you don't have to be super mom, super dad, super everything in these cultures. In our culture, it's all about us, and it's all about us doing everything, and we have to be so good at everything because we're so individualized. If you've ever been in other cultures, you become easier on yourself. I mean, I did when I was in Nepal and Thailand for 6 months. You know, people have time to hang out, and everyone does everything, and the work is, instead of all being done by machines, is done by people. You're interacting all day long. This is just my personal belief, but the less interacting we have in our lives, the harder we're going to be, because we're social beings and we really relax around people a lot of the time, not always. So that's just my belief, but and I think I've shared this before, but at a Western Buddhist conference, Dalai Lama came as a guest to Spirit Rock, and Sharon Salzberg asked a question, well-known Vipassana teacher, about how to work with all our students who are so hard on themselves. And the Dalai Lama had to go back and forth like 5 minutes with his translator to get this concept of being really hard on yourself. There's not even a word for it in Tibetan language. So I assume that's changing as Tibet gets modernized and Tibetan culture gets modernized. But there's definitely a cultural piece. Yeah. And then there's a family history piece. If you somehow didn't get loved and seen for you, who you were most deeply, or really traumatic events happened, that creates all kinds of bad feelings about oneself. And in all cases, it's not personal. Whether it came from your family history or cultural or just being human, it's not personal. And that's great, right? We don't have to blame ourselves for being hard on ourselves, which is just being hard on ourselves again. It's actually a relief to get it that we're all in this together. We're all doing this together. I expect everyone in this room came to this topic tonight, unless you didn't read your email, because you're hard on yourself in some way. We're all doing this together, and there's relief in that. So, so we think our judging is reality-based, but if you're judging, you can't understand. You can't understand and judge at the same time. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Take it into your life. Seriously, take that into your life. Because judgments are conclusions, even positive judgments. They're conclusions. A person is in a box, and everything's getting filtered through your belief. And you don't learn anything when you're judging. So our judgments are not reality-based. They're partial. They're frozen. They come from points of view. And they're disconnected. So the three hallmarks of discernment, this is when you know you're not so much in judging, you're just in discerning. When it comes to people, we look at actions rather than make character assumptions or judgments. So rather than saying that person is generous, that's a generous person when someone does something generous, we just say, oh, how generous. Thank you. It's a second step to say, oh, that's a generous person. We don't know that. We know they're generous in that moment. So when you're being more discerning about people, you're focused more on actions and less on their personhood. Does that make sense? So watch your language. Notice in your language, that person's a real jerk, right? That's a personhood statement. Pretty judgmental. If you say something specific, like, wow, you know, that person cut me off in traffic, that's a lot more truthful, right? Then, what a jerk. That's where you're sort of going into more generalizations. You're probably discerning if your statement is sort of present-based. Oh, well, that's the way it is now. Knowing that things can change, and knowing that because people are complex and situations are complex, we might very well see a different aspect of the person later. So if you're focused on someone's actions, and if you're focused in nowness, you're much more likely in a discerning kind of mode. And then if you're really focused on harm and benefit as opposed to good and bad or right and wrong, now, and this is just semantical, but this is the way I'm using it, then from my perspective, you're more in discernment. You're not so much in value judgment, but you're really focused on, huh, how's it working? So those are just sort of the three main things. Focus on actions. Focus on if is something causing harm or benefit. And being focused on sort of present time. So again, there's nothing hard and fast about this, but just in terms of separating out discernment and judgment, it's kind of like that, those three things. And so for this series, we're not going to distinguish between inner and outer judgments. Being inner or outer is usually the same thing. It comes from the same part of our brain, usually. And I think a lot of you know this, but for those of you who don't, for instance, mindfulness uses the social circuitry of the brain. We're relating, we're being social with ourselves when we're being mindful. So inner and outer aren't really big distinctions in our minds. If we have a very loving heart for ourselves, we're going to automatically love others. If we're very critical of ourselves, we're automatically going to be critical of others. They just go together. So in terms of the series, tonight is really working with mindfulness, and so we're going to start doing that. There's probably going to be a class on looking at all the shortcomings of thoughts and maybe doing the work of Byron Katie in that. A class focused on loving-kindness practice. A class focused on resourcing all the good in your life. Maybe a class focusing on the psychological roots of judging mind. And lastly, something about how when we transform our judging mind through our practice, it turns into an ally of discriminating wisdom. So what's left over when all the aversion is gone is discrimination. Clear seeing, very clear seeing. Does anyone want to say anything at this point before I go further?
I have one question.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When you had asked us to think about what would happen if we could hit the mute button on our judgments, or our criticisms of ourselves, I'm curious if you have any generalizations about what can happen to people who can approximate. Able to be less self-critical and less harsh. What kinds of things might
lighter, happier, more loving, more present. Everything we need in order to change can come from compassion. So this will be sort of the segue into mindfulness. We won't want to change this pattern unless we feel it. We need to feel the impact of being harsh on ourselves in order to be motivated to change it. And it's only when we feel the pain will we be moved to compassion. And when we're moved to compassion, compassion contains the motivation to act. And so we'll want to act when we see the cost, the price that we pay, psychically, energetically, physically. So in some ways, it's a hard path to work with our judgments this way, to open to them and feel how we are when we're judging. But if we do it, and as Pema Chodron says, we exercise the wisdom of no escape. If in our mindfulness practice, we just show up for what's happening, and we don't get it, that there is no escape, that all of the things we do in our minds have an impact. But we realize we have to be kind to ourselves once we see the impact. And that makes us lighter and happier and more loving when we just naturally start. Our system, when we feel the pain of something, and it takes time, but our system will want to let go once we feel the pain. So it's a little bit of a surgery without the anesthesia. But it really does work. It really does help. It really does naturally make us kinder. I think it's one of the lawful products of meditation practices that we become kinder to ourselves. So this is one way that meditation helps us transform judging mind. Another way is it just helps us feel better in general. When we're relaxed, who needs judging? And this, we're really going to go to town on this in the class when we focus on taking in all the good in our lives. When we feel really good in our bodies, that even the inner critic is willing to say, I don't need it. I'll just shut up now. So any way in which we can relax more in our bodies through yoga or meditation or exercise or whatever is really helps calm down the inner critic. When we start relaxing more through our practice, we just taste natural well-being. And we somehow naturally like ourselves more when we're like that. We're sort of at peace with ourselves and at peace with the world more. And when we do that, it's just lawful that we really like ourselves more. In fact, we might want to celebrate ourselves even. So there's a little joke about being hard on ourselves, and then I'll go to celebrating ourselves from Wendy Liebman. I went to the 30th reunion of my preschool, but I didn't want to go because I'd put on like 100 pounds. So that's how we are, right, when we're tight and really hard on our bodies and hard on ourselves. But this is how we can be when we relax. This is called Don't Expect Applause. Tibetan Buddhist Maxim by Ellen Bass. Don't expect applause, and yet wouldn't it be welcome at the end of each ordinary day The audience could be small, the theater modest. Folding chairs in a church basement would do. Just a short, earnest burst of applause that you got up that morning and one way or the other made it through the day. You soaked up in the steaming shower, drank your Starbucks in the car, let the guy with the Windex wipe your windshield during the long red light up Broad Street. Or maybe you were that guy, not daring to light up while you stood there because everyone's so down on smoke these days. Or you kissed your wife as she hurried out the door, even though you were pretty sure she was meeting her lover at the Flamingo Motel. Even though you wanted to grab her by a hank of her sleek hair. Maybe your son's in jail, your daughter stopped eating, and your husband's still dead this morning, just like he was yesterday and the day before that. And yet, you put on your shoes and take a walk, and when a neighbor says good morning, you say good morning back. Would a round of applause be amiss? Even if you weren't good, if you yelled at your kid, poisoned the ants, drank too much, and said that really stupid thing you promised yourself you wouldn't say, even if you don't deserve it, would a round of applause be amiss? The more you meditate, the more you relax, the less you'll judge. So that's one really good pattern. Another important pattern is how to work with the judging when it happens. So, and we're sort of in a conundrum here, because if we're judging our judging, it's more judging. So we need to let our motivation come from compassion rather than, oh my God, I'm judging again, I can't stand it. What's wrong with me? I'm so judgmental. Have you ever had that thought? So we can be motivated to change by self-approval and compassion. We really can be very productive. When we're really aligned with what we really want, and when we really have compassion for making sure that our lives are as good as we can make them be. So as I said, though, a few things have to happen for us to be motivated in this way. We have to be willing to notice our judgments and feel our judgments and feel the cost. And then kindness starts coming better when we get it. And a relationship's such a good place, right, to see how hard you are on yourself because of your partner as your mirror. Who's very happy to show you how hard you're being on them, which is a way of seeing how hard you are on yourself. So most of you know this, let me say it very briefly, but the way we open to our judgments works pretty well is through this approach called RAIN. Recognize, accept, investigate, non-identify. So this is basically what we do when we're being mindful of a difficult state. So you've noticed, oh God, I'm being so hard on myself. So that's the first step, just to recognize, just to notice, self-judging. And then the second step, and this can be very hard in this case, is to accept. Okay, I'm being really hard on myself. Okay, here it is. Of course, exactly. That's the height of acceptance is of course. Or like Jack Kornfield likes to say, how big can it get? Let yourself feel how uncomfortable it is to be so clenched in your heart. And do this by really feeling the body experience of it. The more you're in the sensation of it, and the less you're in the story of it, the easier it is. You notice the story, but come back to the body, even if it just means like tight chest, just keep noticing tight chest. And then when you do this, the third thing starts happening. You're investigating. So once you've really recognized, accepted, and you're allowing it, you can see what it's like. What's it like in the body? Especially notice tension or lack of tension and where that is in the body. As you do that, then you start noticing, you start having insight into things. And every experience is impermanent. It comes and goes. So this is only going to stick around for a while, as long as you don't keep feeding it. You can also notice that you don't sit here and judge yourself on purpose. Just like our judging is impersonal in that it comes from our history, it's even better to see that experientially. That actually you just watch your mind bounce through four different thoughts and arrive at a judgment. And you're just, then you see, oh, it's just the mind doing what the mind does. And you can really watch this happen. I remember on retreat, a cascade of mental events, and it was just nothing but free association. So I was hearing a John Coltrane jazz tune in my head, and I was in kind of bliss, and then I remembered this thing my therapist used to say in my early 20s, infant bliss. You know, like she would talk about how blissful children can be. And so I thought, infant bliss. And then I remembered my godson when he was an infant, and a time I had dropped him, and he fell on his head. But I had put his little baby seat down in the living room a little hastily, because I wanted to go to the kitchen and grab a chocolate chip cookie. And so he toppled, and he hit his head, and it was a bad scene. He was fine, but he bawled for a while. And I thought, my self-judgment was, God, I'm such a greedy person. And then, but there was, I watched this whole thing happen, and there was this jolt of insight. And that was, you know, a very unworthy thought. I'm so greedy. And I was so, like, slumped over energetically. It's like, well, where did that thought come from? Oh, it came because I, like, remembered a John Coltrane tune. And the rest was just a cascade of associations. So here I am, like, spinning around and feeling really bad. And yet it came from nowhere. It's just the mind doing its thing. So you get a lot of insight into your judging mind through your practice. And you can take it less personally and less seriously. There I go again. Worthless piece of shit. Oh, yeah. All right. There you go. Okay. Thank you for sharing. Thanks for your input. Okay, next thought. Because everything does change. So if you can get out of the way, your judgments really don't have a lot of impact. That's the other insight you get, is that your judging really is just a burp of the moment from the brain. It really is insubstantial. The only power a thought has is the power you give it. If you're just like, wow, okay, judgmental thought, next, and then some other thought comes along, that judgment doesn't go anywhere. So you can relate this way to your judging by just knowing how limited thoughts are. And then a thought comes up and it's very judgmental, and you can be like, oh, judging thought. Why buy into it? Why spend any time with it? It's just, you know, a crappy thought. It's all it is. Has no power. It's just a movie. It's just a mind moment. It doesn't have to go anywhere. And so this is how our practice can really help us with our judgments. We don't have to refute our thoughts. We don't have to argue with them, convince ourselves otherwise. We just simply dethrone them by realizing it's just a thought. Next. Another judgment might come along, but that's just a thought. Next. Oh, another one. Oh. It just keeps going. So if you're thinking you're wrong, and if you're judging, you're really wrong. That just let that be the take home. And I'll stop there. Maybe one input, and then we'll end with some sitting. Nobody? Okay. So we'll end with about 10 minutes of meditation, and but I have an assignment with your willingness. So one thing you can do to be on the lookout for your judgmental thoughts, remember, recognizing is the key thing to even know you're judging. So for the next 10 minutes, if you would, count your judgmental thoughts, whether they're judgments about you or about someone else. Just count them. So be with your breath, but be aware of your thinking process as well, and see how many judgmental thoughts you have in the next 10 minutes. Just as a way to give yourself a little distance, not as fodder for more judgment.